This is Clinical Conversations podcast number 130. Thank you for joining us. We're part of Journal Watch, a medical research surveillance service whose website is jwatch.org. I'm Joe Elia. My co-host, Dr. Danielle Schurer of the Medical University of South Carolina, is also here. This month's edition of Health Affairs has a paper showing how several low-cost actions, when done together, can lower patient mortality, hospital infection rates, and the lengths and costs of hospital stays. The researchers used three interventions in a 20-bed pediatric intensive care unit at the University of North Carolina Women's and Children's Hospitals. First, strict compliance with hand hygiene. Second, use of a ventilator-associated pneumonia bundle. And third, ensuring compliance with best practices for managing central line catheters. The results must have been heartening. Compared with the baseline period of the study, the patients during the full implementation period had significantly fewer hospital-acquired infections, lower mortality rates, shorter hospital stays, and lower total hospital costs. The paper's first and senior authors are our guests. Dr. Bradford Harris is currently a medical officer at the Food and Drug Administration. Dr. Matthew Maciejewski is an associate professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine at Duke. Welcome to you both.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Brad Harris.
Hi. Great to be here, Matt Maciejewski.
I wanted to begin by asking you, Dr. Harris, as a clinician, could you describe how easy or difficult it was to get people washing their hands faithfully?
That was really the crux of the whole process, and it was incredibly difficult. When we started both of these projects, hand hygiene was not the front runner in terms of what we were targeting. But it became very clear to all of us involved in the ventilator-associated pneumonia project as well as the central line project that hand hygiene was absolutely essential. So it was a slow process that really got people to start changing their habits.
You would think that you'd probably want to hand out the information about Ignaz Semmelweis or something like that,
I laugh, but I quote him quite frequently.
Oh, you do? Okay, good. This is not a new concept, but it's a very difficult one, and as you've learned. Dr. Maciejewski, your background is health services research, and so as somebody who's seen a lot of that work, did the results from the single 20-bed ICU surprise you?
I would say that I was quite surprised, because in doing prior research on randomized trials where investigators have had control over the protocol that's delivered, and in a very stylized format that was not in the context of a busy clinical practice, many trials involved with patient motivation or clinician motivation have been null or close to null. And so the strong, consistent findings across a range of outcomes in the study was a pleasant surprise.
You instituted many process changes over a pretty short period of time. In my mind, that was probably the most impressive part of your work. Were you worried about, or did you find any what we call unintended consequences? In other words, there were other important clinical conditions that didn't get as much attention given the focus on ventilator pneumonia and central lines?
Not really. The nice thing about it was that the way we practice in the pediatric ICU, it's a lot more of a team collaborative environment.
Mm-hmm.
So patient care stayed the same level in terms of just what we did on a day-in and day-out basis. But what we were doing is just changing the basic how people cared for patients at the bedside.
One of the strategies you tried that I feel like is still a little controversial out there, but certainly could be pertinent to any in or outpatient clinical area, is this concept of posting your very widely disseminating and posting in general areas your success or failure of how you were doing. So you had these signs, for example, that said, It's been X number of days since our last ventilator-associated pneumonia, and from what I understand, those were in areas that patients and families could also view, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
And what kind of feedback did you get either from patients or families or from staff, either positive or negative?
It worked really well. The way we did it was we first put those signs up in the staff lounge, more so that we could get the staff to accept it.
And that's sort of internal audit feedback.
Correct. And also, we kind of gave them a couple of talking scripts so that when families would ask about it, they could explain it and not feel defensive. And the beautiful thing about it was it held everybody accountable.
And then when did you and your staff feel comfortable posting it in viewable areas?
We literally had, I think we had it in the staff room for maybe a couple of weeks or maybe a month. And then after we had enough staff people come in and out of the break room and had the script for a while, we then posted it.
Some of the other techniques you used, such as written notices to people who weren't complying with some of the process measures and hand hygiene, again, in that same vein, how was that received? Was there any sort of getting over that speed bump where people were sort of offended at first, or did you feel like from the get-go that you had a pretty collaborative environment?
Well, what helped enormously was we had high-level administrative buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
The chief medical officer and the chief nursing officer for the hospital system were backing us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first stage was to confront the offending individual and just kind of say, you know, sorry, I didn't see you wash your hands. Would you mind just washing them? And for those who either did not comply or became somewhat belligerent, it's hard to get people to change their behaviors,
mm-hmm.
especially if they've been doing it for 20 or 30 years in some cases. And so this was really a good way of reminding them that the stakes are higher,
mm-hmm.
and letting them know that, yes, they are being watched and they are accountable for their behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really what led to the success of it.
And this is Matt. There's actually a recent evidence out of psychology suggesting that a potential explanation why those signs about the days since the last adverse events were powerful at, when framed in a context of patient outcomes. There's a draft manuscript that's in press in Psychological Science by Grant and Hoffman called It's Not All About Me, Motivating Hospital Hand Hygiene by Focusing on Patients, that found that when posting signs encouraging providers to wash their hands because it prevents themselves, the providers, from catching diseases, it wasn't as effective as when signs were posted saying hand hygiene prevents patients from catching diseases. And it seemed like framing the importance of hand hygiene around the positive benefits to patients made a big difference, which would be consistent with the motivational power of the signs that they used.
Has the wider community, have they adopted any of those strategies yet? Or, I mean, you know, this is a 20-bed unit. This, you know, the hospital's obviously much bigger. I don't want to get you in trouble. But, I mean, there's a certain amount of administrative inertia in big institutions. And so I'm just wondering how easily or how broadly seen and recognized your efforts were, and whether the larger institution has tried to adopt them.
Yes, the qualified answer is absolutely yes. What did happen very quickly was one of the things we noticed when we were kind of mapping out the process was that the bedside staff were pretty much doing 90% of their work inside the room, and there's really no place that was convenient for people to wash their hands because the alcohol was outside the room, the sink was as you entered the room, but when a nurse is doing their work at the bedside on the other side of the room, they're not going to necessarily wash their hands in between clean and dirty activities.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a thing of alcohol or Purell or whatever brand they're using today at the bedside on the nurse's workstation and on the ventilator, which just when you make it convenient,
people do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that spread rapidly throughout the hospital. And and part of our lessons were rapidly incorporated. They didn't necessarily follow the same footprint, mostly because you usually have different issues going into different units with different medical staff and different providers working there. So they were clearly adapted at different levels and different units.
Do you know whether any of those efforts are being, you mentioned, I think it's the term is Six Sigma techniques. So are any of those being adopted as well? Are they measuring beyond your work? I know that the finance people must be interested because they're thinking, wow, you had something like a $12 million savings in the unit in 1 year?
Yeah, it's certainly brought a lot of attention, and the methods, there are multiple models within Six Sigma that you can use. One is the Fold-to-Meg process, which we went through, and then you can use express workouts, which are more akin to the plan, do, study, and act cycles in business.
Uh-huh.
So there are multiple models that you can use to kind of adapt and move things along, so it depends on what the problem is and what you're working on as to which method you employ.
What I really like about your work, I mean, certainly the outcomes were impressive, but, I mean, it really is sort of the basic quality improvement fundamentals that can be taken outside of a 20-bed PICU and translated into a number of, you know, different projects. And it really is just like you touched on, it's, you know, identifying the barriers, like why are people not doing something that is common sense, such as washing your hands, understanding their workflow, holding individuals accountable, and then just like you said, I think most importantly, and what we probably haven't done enough in the U.S. healthcare system is really focusing on the patient. So it's accountability of the clinician, but with a focus on the ultimate outcome, which is patients, and maybe that can turn the barometer in the right direction of overcoming a lot of these really difficult problems.
Yeah, really agree.
Just so that some listeners may not know, I didn't read the results. At the peak of implementation, you estimated that the savings within that unit were something like $12 million. The length of stay of the patients in the hospital, not just the ICU, was lowered by some 2.3 days. Mortality rates, same number, were down 2.3 percentage points, which is not relative, but absolute percentage point drop.
Correct.
That's amazing.
I was stunned when we crunched the numbers.
Yeah.
I knew we had made a difference because prior to getting everything in place, you could reliably predict that every child who was either ventilated or had a central line would be highly febrile within 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And once we got everything in place, it would be one child would be febrile out of 20.
Mm-hmm.
After a week of being on service.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you knew there was something going on that was different, and then when we looked at the numbers, my gosh, it was just amazing.
I'm sure that there are listeners there who are thinking, all right, you know, I really should try to start something like this where I am. What would be your advice to somebody who wants to do that?
There are two critical places to start. One is to make sure that you've got high-level administration buy-in, just because you're going to need somebody to plow through the barriers that will come up with any initiative that involves change. And then the second one is to make sure that you talk to the people that are on the front line and get their buy-in. Because, again, if you don't have their buy-in, whatever you're doing is going to be undermined. So it really takes it's a truly multidisciplinary approach and focus that needs to happen.
It's not easy.
No.
Great work.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is Matt. Let me just note that it would be really wonderful if some group of researchers would replicate with our results through a similar initiative in a study that included a group of control hospitals that did not undergo a similar intervention before or in a similar time frame so that we could be absolutely sure that what we're seeing here generalizes broadly.
I would advise them to have a data safety committee that was prepared, poised to stop the study at about 6 months, if not sooner.
That's right.
If not sooner, because I, from what I'm hearing, you started seeing things that were unexpected right away, and okay, well, anything further to add?
Now, I do have one disclaimer, and that this work was part of my work as a faculty member at UNC and is by no means, has no relation to anything I do for the FDA and is not part of the FDA.
And that's Dr. Harris speaking.
That would be correct.
Okay. All right. Dr. Harris and Dr. Maciejewski, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Appreciate it.
Sure. Have a good one.
You too. Bye. Bye-bye.
That was our 130th. Earlier podcasts are all available at podcasts.jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joey Alia. Join us next time, please. For myself and Dr. Danielle Scherer, thank you for listening.